Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do.
Okay. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Michael Hoenewald. Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm good, Tanya. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know what's so funny? I'm going to confess this to my audience, that I have been calling you Macau for the last month or so, but then realize it's the Dutch pronunciation of Michael. I just find that hilarious because sometimes as a British speaker, when we're phonetically looking at something, you'll see it in a very British way. But really, really welcomed, lovely to have you on the show today, Michael. And you are a data scientist. But today we're going to talk about a mixture of things: Black history, we're going to talk about COVID, and we're also going to talk about mental health, because Michael is very passionate about all of those three things, yeah? And out of the three of them, Black history, mental health, and at the moment what we're going through right now in this current situation, also we're going into the second lockdown now as well in this country, but I feel this will probably be aired a little bit later. So out of those three subjects, what one are you most passionate about?
Well, for me, Black history is the most relevant because it's also related to other elements, considering the society that we live in, the whole history of the African diaspora, how they got out of Africa into Americas, all over the world. There's a lot of trauma there, and trauma and mental health are very strongly correlated. So I think that's also one of the reasons that I think that why mental health is also so very important, because when you look at trauma, normally when people are traumatized, you would say okay, they would need to be treated with empathy and support so that they try to heal the trauma as much as possible. But when you finish to look at the ancestors of the enslaved Africans, all that they endured, and then at the end of slavery, there was no healing for them. There was no nurturing of their souls to move forward in a constructive manner. So what you then get is unresolved trauma, and unresolved trauma can most definitely, I believe, also be transferred to the generations after that. So that's how I see Black history and mental health really interacting, because the trauma is huge, enormous. But if you don't deal with trauma, if you don't heal it, and also if you're not in a safe environment, then very difficult to heal trauma, because trauma does require safety, and where your current environment is still hostile, then it will be very difficult to really heal from the trauma. So that's where I see the intersection of Black history and mental health, and I think it's very important to consider these elements.
Most definitely. And as you're talking there, that's just so important, because it's kind of that I call it the transgenerational trauma. And what has happened is, if there is no healing, then the trauma manifests into the next generation and the next generation. And that's what's happened very much within our culture. And there's been lightness and there's been darkness. And I feel I'm going through the process of training to be a therapist right now. Yeah. And before that, I'm also a hypnotherapist. I'm a trained hypnotherapist. I do hypnotherapy. And I also do psychodrama, and I'm taking it a little bit further, just because since I started going into therapy myself for my own gain, I felt it was so healing. But then I realized when you go to the root and to the root and to the root, it's not just about me and my childhood. I go further. I think, okay, what have my parents experienced? And then you understand that whether your behaviors or how you behave and some of those behaviors are carried through. And until you do anything about that,
yeah,
you can't stop it. So people think, okay, I'm not like my mom, I'm not like my dad. People say that often, but things kind of come through without you even thinking about it. And sometimes the things that you may not want to carry through to that next generation or that, or in your behaviors, you have to do the healing to let go of it from a deeper level, not just from speaking, but from a deeper level, from a subconscious level. And I feel that's why it's so important. And the work that I do, I feel so important. And I've had some amazing conversations with you, Mikhail, which is why I want you to have this on you on the show today. So I'm going to say today, it's not going to be a traditional real stories. We're going to more talk about Black history today. We're going to talk about mental health. We're going to talk about all of these things in terms of that are worldwide and that are collective in certain communities. And the first thing that I want to talk about, I know that you, first of all, we'll give a little bit of insight to my audience. So can you just tell them where your ancestry is from? And yeah, obviously you're here, you know, you're in Amsterdam. Are you in Amsterdam now? And
yeah,
what your experiences kind of being as growing up in Amsterdam as a man that is West Indian. But just tell my audience a little bit about that in terms of where you're from.
Yeah, I'm born and raised actually in Amsterdam. So I've always lived here, always went to school here, always worked here in Amsterdam. So I'm pretty much tied to the city. But my family is originally from Suriname in South America. It was like a former Dutch colony. So that's where my ancestors were enslaved. Like in my family, like they've been here for quite a while. Like the first ones arrived here in the 50s already. And before that, actually, there was already someone here. When you look at the experiences, like I think it's what I see when I consider like Dutch society, European society also in general, is that they don't really acknowledge their own history, like the active participation in is the slave trade and slavery. They don't really acknowledge it. So it's almost like they try to separate themselves from their own history. And by doing that, that then allows people to like create a false image of themselves, like that they are a super tolerant society or super open society. Well, if you really consider like, okay, where you came from, they would realize that like with such history that will also inform like, okay, how your current society functions, like the language that you use and also like how you perceive other people. Because like the word tolerant, that's something that I hear a lot when I listen to discussions about the Netherlands, but also about the UK. But for me, the word tolerant isn't necessarily a positive word, because what does tolerance actually mean? It's just like, okay, I won't persecute you, or maybe I will allow you to be here, but I don't accept you. So for me, the word tolerant doesn't really mean that much. And like, I think that's the big problem. What I see is that if you don't really get real about your history as a nation, then it's very difficult to move forward in any meaningful manner. And so that's when you talk about the experience, I think that's, I think that sums up at least part of that experience that
Most definitely. And what's so interesting is what comes to my mind is it's so horrible, that word tolerate. You know, it's like, I will tolerate you.
Yeah.
And it is harsh. It's like, okay, or I can go so far as to say, I've accepted you into my country.
Yeah.
I've included you, let's say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when people talk about diversity and inclusion, for me, it goes deeper, because it's like, okay, I'll accept this. I'm going to diversify my company. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to include you. But then it goes deeper, because it's not just about diversity and inclusion. It's about mindset. Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. Because
you could have people from all different backgrounds who have such a colonialist mindset,
yep,
and they don't even realize it. you know, because I'm seeing all these things happen right now. I'm not going to mention any names, I'm not going to go down the whole political, British political thing, but I suppose what I'm saying on a deeper level, and I think what you're saying here is, you know what, we have to have this mindset, and that's what I did a talk on decolonization in terms of decolonizing the mind, yeah?
Yeah.
That's how deep it needs to go in terms of our approach in life. And with regards to the Dutch, you know, I'm sure you have good and you have bad in every person that you kind of work with. Some people are open to learn. And then you have the whole idea or this concept of white fragility, which is, like you say, where there is guilt, but the guilt goes so deep. And you have, I feel like you have to get past that guilt and acknowledge, it's like any human being when you're doing healing, or we talked about, you know, transgenerational healing as well. And it's like anything, we have to go back to our ancestors, whether you're black, white, wherever you're from, and look at what has gone on and accept it. But then from a mindset perspective, it's like going through that process of decolonization to let go of all of that horrible, deep-rooted kind of separatism. Because that's what it is. And it's not just separatism, it's hate there as well, in some, you know, if you look at it.
Yeah. And
there's all these different layers, isn't there? There's separatism, there's hate. And there's, it's like if one person does something to you, and it's even like, for example, myself, if I've experienced something with a Chinese person, I'm not going to label every single Chinese person, do you know? And that is what happens within that to us more often than not, is what I'm saying, doesn't it? More often than not, it happens with us as black people, that someone will have an experience and then you all get kind of typecasted. And that's what we've, I feel moving forward, that's what I want to let go of.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we're all human and we've got to be seen as human. Because the people, a lot of people might say I'm a humanist, they talk about humanistic qualities, but it starts from being able to step into somebody else's shoes and look through their lens and understand what they've gone through. And some of that is acknowledging history. And that's why I hate when people say, oh, we're just going to talk about the future, don't worry about talking about history. No, we have to understand our history. Just like in therapy, you have to understand your patterns and learn where they have come from to eliminate them.
I totally agree. And I think also, like, it's good that you make the point, like, that we're all humans. I think that's the crucial element that, when you look at, when you consider, like, the anti-black racism, analytically and critically consider it, then you, I think the key underlying element is that the humanity of so-called black people isn't necessarily accepted or acknowledged by non-black people. And that will then allow you to treat people in a different manner than you would treat human beings that you consider part of your own group. And I think that's very much part of the history, like where you come from. Like if you sell people, if you put them on the auction block, if you put in your own laws that basically like with the Dutch laws, that's because, you know, my post, you know, I just drop straight facts, cold hard facts. So I don't need to get into discussions with people. I just drop the facts from the historical records. And when you look at, like, for instance, how my ancestors were described in the law, Dutch law, like until 1828, we were not considered humans at all. Wow. So that was this way, we weren't considered humans at all.
And just give us that figure again, so until 18?
Until 1828, the enslaved Africans were not considered human beings.
No.
But then, okay, there came a change in the law. That was 1828 for then the Netherlands. But the law then still said that, okay, they are human beings, but they need to be considered as like like subjects that still need like paternal supervision. That's how they are to be viewed. So like, okay, you're human beings, but at the same time, no, you still need certain paternal supervision. And the paternal supervision is then like, okay, your white owners need to have the supervision over you. But before that, like I said, before 1828, we were not considered human beings. We were actually described as moving goods. Like, you know, like you have cargo and some cargo can move a bit. And that's how they were and classified. And like, if you have that so entrenched that it's even in your laws, then you need to be aware that that also then becomes part of your society as a society. Like one of the persons I talked to you before about was like Dr. Jamila Lysgard in America. And like, what's interesting about her work is that like, I like to look at language, like the power of language, and she really focuses on that. And what she also says is like, language is like a vessel almost, like it contains history and culture. And when you look at like, she then talks about the English language, like for instance, like how that is policed in classrooms and also in workplaces, like for instance, African-American English, that is looked down upon within the American society, and even the African-Americans, they internalize that negativity. But what Jamila Lysgard so clearly shows is that when you actually analyze the structure of African-American English, you will actually see that certain of those, the elements in there, the structure, is actually way more regular than the what's considered the normal English. And what you also see is that there are actually elements that tie back to certain Creole languages that you also see in other countries in the Americas, but also in West African languages. So what you actually then see is that even though they've been so cut off from their ancestry, when you see it, when you look at the way that the African-American English is structured, you actually still see African elements in there. And what she then also says is that, that like, why should she then treat, because she says like, I know that our language has been taken from us and that we now need to use your language, but why would I then treat the imprint of my ancestors on your language as anything like less than equal to the way you speak the English language? So I think that's interesting to consider, like that you're then thought to look down upon the way you speak, but in actuality, the way you speak is a reflection of where you came from, and there's still definitely still some African elements in there. And that's, for me, interesting to see, like when I look at all the different like societies of like Africans in the diaspora, like I look at like the some of those things as binders. So like when I look at the language, I really see that. If it's one thing that she says is like when you look, when you say in English, like she is crazy, in African-American English, you would then drop the verb to be. So instead of she's crazy, you would say she crazy. And that's not looked down upon, but when you look at Creole languages, you actually see that in a lot of Creole languages, you do the exact same thing, the verb to be then drops. You also see that in West African languages. So that's what she tries to say is then, well, they teach you to look down upon the way you speak, but in actuality, it's more regular than standard English, and it ties back to a very deep ancestry. So yeah, that's why I really love her work. She really goes into that, and
I love it as well. Yeah. I love it as well. And I feel like it's, I think when you shared that TED talk, she did a TED talk, didn't she, Jamila Lysgard? And she had the, what's it, the five A's, when she said, you know, we have to first of all, be, and I feel from a healing perspective, she says, awareness is one of the A's, which is being aware of who you are and actualizing in terms of the whole idea of being able to actualize what you do so you can liberate the mind.
Yeah.
And then this whole idea of achievement, which is being fully invested in this language, fully invested in what you are.
Yeah.
And then she has the alteration is to be able to be adaptable with how we are. And then the action is to be able to speak. And I thought that was just so clever when she broke it down in those sections. And she said, no, because she said she's a poet, so that's why she used the A's.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting, what you said, so spot on there, when you mentioned Creole, and I'm thinking, my parents are Jamaican, so I'm thinking Patois, and look at this African-American language, and say she, who, or that they will miss out the language. So no matter how much this colonialism has come in, we've still kept something, because it's like, it's embedded. So even though we may have lost our original tribal languages, you know, through slavery and so forth, there's still something within us as people. So for 400 years, we have, you know, colonialism has affected us and our language has been taken away from us.
Yeah.
Our religion has been taken away from us. There's so much things that have been taken, but at the same time, what we have to celebrate is what we've lost, we have rebuilt and as human beings we have created. So like you say, with the African Americans, with the Patwa, with the Creole, we've developed our own way of communicating and speaking. And if you look back, like you say, with the ancestry with the West African language, you can see those links. And I think, my goodness me, that is powerful. I feel like as a race of people, Black people, as a race of people, we have been through so much. We have been shot down. We have been suppressed, oppressed on such a deep level. But we've been able to stand up. We've been able to withstand it. We've had such amazing resilience. And then creativity, because if you think, you think about music, you know, you think about how we express ourselves through music, yeah, how we express ourselves through poetry, how we express ourselves through drama, you know, all of those things have come through. And also, we've also influenced our counterparts. So we've influenced the white man, the Asian man, you know, because if you think about it, you just have to look at cultural appropriation, don't we? If we look at it deeper. But I think sometimes we talk about Black history, we talk about all of this, but there is just so much to celebrate within that trauma or within that drama. And I feel that when we get to that point of healing that thyself and walking in that energy, we're bloody strong, aren't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think also that like our history started like way back, because like now it almost sounds, when you would look at the history books, it would seem that our history started with slavery. Well, that's not, it's more like that slavery disrupted our history and our reality.
Yeah.
But we go back way before that. And indeed, there's also like, but I think that that's also an important thing. Like when I say, like, I like history. Also as a child, I loved reading, but like when you read stuff, it's often still very shocking to see, like, okay, you're in school for all those many years, and there's so much that you don't get taught in school. And like when you first look at, even like not too long ago, I posted about Columbus, because I think the important thing there is that, like, of course, it's already like total insanity to, for all those years that we got taught, like, that Columbus, like, discovered America. Like, already, like, of course, it's ridiculous to say he discovered this when there are already people living there, but also to consider that he actually now landed in North America, landed in the Caribbean. But okay, but that's the fancy that you get taught. But we also look at like what kind of man he was, like, just by going into his own writings, because like nowadays, like, there's a lot of pushback also when you look at the Black Lives Matter movement. I know in the UK also, for instance, that there was a lot of people that wanted to remove certain statues, but where you just look at the facts, for instance, like Christopher Columbus, the supposedly great man, like how he looked at the people when he arrived in the Americas. He looked at the Native American people there, and his first thought was like, okay, wow, they look good. They have great bodies, great faces. They should be good servants. A few years later, I know the exact year actually, in 1500, he wrote a letter to an acquaintance. He said like, well, there's a good market here for young girls. And he was talking about the Native girls. Then I said the current age group that's very like hot, or that they're really looking for like the 9 to 10 year old girls. And I'm thinking like, okay, that's in his own writing, his literal writings. So we don't even have to go far. We don't need to debate stuff. It's like, it's the records that have been there all along. And yet still that man is like put onto some pedestal. There's even like a Columbus Day, and then I'm like, yeah, then we're really creating a total false narrative. And then you really need to ask yourself the question, like, okay, what are you celebrating and what are the values that you hold dear? Because like we see like what he has written down, like how he has been treated. And because when you look at the island of Haiti, you can talk a lot about Haiti, about even about the later enslaved Africans that came there, but we even look before that, like there lived millions of indigenous native people there. They were called the Taino, and they are gone now completely. And that has all to do with the Europeans that landed there, and Christopher Columbus actually landed on Haiti. So there's a lot, yeah, in the history that I'm like, we don't get taught in school, but that really impacts how you view the world. Because if you know this history, then yeah, you would look differently, not only at Columbus, but also at, like, the whole idea that the Europeans that they brought civilization across the world. Now, that's not true. Like, it's the Africans. Like I said, we have a long history already in Africa that goes way back. They already have civilizations there. But also in the Americas, they had fantastic civilizations, but they got totally destroyed. And when you look at islands like Haiti and the Bahamas, like, the indigenous population has been eradicated there. It's totally gone. And those are things that are, yeah, it's mind-boggling that we don't get taught that in school, while we do get taught other stuff.
Well, they just take out the bits, don't they? And that's why I think a lot of people talk about how we have been removed from history. I mean, even here in the UK, when they talk about World War II, a lot of people did not realise the amount of West Indian people that fought in the war, you know, because they weren't recognised. And in terms of help to rebuild this country, it wasn't recognised. And we look at the NHS, we helped to build that here in England. And it's interesting, it's almost like we have been, everything we have done, and it's probably going back to that idea, I know you mentioned in, I can't remember the date, in 1828, you know, we were not considered humans, but that kind of mindset, that idea, as historically has been so deep rooted that it's been okay to just, whatever we have done has not been acknowledged. And that's why a lot of people don't understand, because I've had loads of conversations with people with regards to what happened with George Floyd. And someone said to me, why is this so big now? It's been happening. You know, what's the difference between George Floyd and Rodney King? That's what someone said to me. You know, Rodney King, you know, years ago, similar thing happened. And what's the difference, people are saying, between Rodney King and George Floyd? I say, I feel one thing for me that is different right now is social media. I feel because, you know, you're able to show what's happened and the world is able to see it a lot faster.
Yeah.
And I also feel that this new generation, there is a change of mindset. I do feel it even just living here with some of the millennials, some of the younger people coming up. There's more a sense of justice about everything. And I do also believe that when you see it, when people really recognize it, people are now coming out and saying, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to change my way of thinking? And companies have actively gone out their way to make changes. So I feel there is a positivity moving forward. So on a kind of a positive note, Michael, just because I want to bring it to a close here, but on a positive note, what do you feel the difference is this time round with regards to everything that's happened with regards to Black Lives Matter? And what do you feel for the future?
What was different now is perhaps that not only that it was, of course, we specifically look at the George Floyd case, not only that it was caught on tape, but the length of the video, the fact that, like, we've seen, they maybe heard stories before about police shootings, but this wasn't even a shooting. This was someone just actually casually leaning on a person's neck for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that might have shocked a lot of people. Also, the smirk on the officer's face, because he clearly felt like, well, even though I'm taped, like, nobody can do me anything, because, like, this is the way we roll around here. So I think that might have been different, but at the same time, I'm like, if people are truly honest, then even though as shocking as that video was, they should not be shocked if they truly open their eyes to what actually is going on in the world. And like, when you also look at the US election at the moment, like, also there you have like a whole wave of protests, and you saw all kinds of different people protesting during the summer. But when you actually look at the numbers, the current president is getting a whole lot of support. And when you break it down even further, when you look at the specific demographics, of course you need to wait till the final count. But I also saw, so the numbers go by, that talked about, like, okay, white women, an even slightly higher percentage than the last time voted on him. But also, like, within the Latin population, even more people voted on him. But also, when you look at Black men, a higher percentage of Black men voted on the current president. And like I said, like, we need to wait till the final numbers. But when you look at those kinds of trends, that also shows you a lot about, how dysfunctional.
So dysfunctional.
Yeah, and also how internalized certain hatred is, because and that's why I say, like, okay, what is different? Like, I do see, like, the young generation, I do see that there's a positive change there, but like when you just look at the hard numbers, like I said, the US election, like, so many people still voted on that guy, and like the difference between like the racism there and here is that there's way more lethal, because like I said, in Europe, they not try to divide themselves from their own history, and like the most violent acts of racism they conducted outside of the European borders, whereas America has internalized that, and that's what you see to this day. But yeah, even though after all that happened, all that they saw, all the videos that they saw, because it was of course not just George Floyd, also other stuff, but still then when it comes down to it, that it's almost still 50-50 in that country, and that to me also really says a lot. So yeah, like moving forward, I am hopeful, but at the same time, this also really shows like how deep the problem is, and it's really, really deep rooted in society. And this for me is really like also talking like the crisis of morals and values, because like when I talk about Christopher Columbus, when I say like, okay, what he has written down, like then I question like, okay, what are the values that you really uphold? And it's the same thing that you can also say for the current American president, like the things that he says during his presidency, but also before that, when he was running for president, that you really need to ask yourself like, okay, what are your values? Also as so-called self proclaimed Christians, like the conservative Christians, I'm like, I also grew up with the Bible, regardless of whether I would call myself a Christian or not. Like, if you actually read the Bible, and if you actually believe in the teachings of Jesus Christ, if that's the person that you're following, well, I also know all the stories, and if that's the case, then you would not be able to support someone who's openly sexist, racist, misogynistic, etc. So there you also see like how people are able to fool themselves. So
And that's what it is. I mean, I think part of it is probably fear of change as well. I think that is it, because if you think about white supremacy, things have been good for the white man for such a long time, and there's a fear of change, basically. There's a fear of that. And then also people are not understanding why Black Lives Matter are retaliating, because they're retaliating because of the pain, because of the constant suppression, oppression. And some people may not like the way they have chosen to do so, but at the end of the day, again, as I said in the beginning of the podcast, it's about being able to step into somebody else's shoes and really think about that. So when you get angry, or other people may get angry about certain things they're witnessing, it's about being able to step into that person's shoes. Why are they behaving? Why is this person behaving this way? How would you behave if your children are dying? How would you behave if you feel like you've got no power, no security? Yeah. It's like when you start putting those questions out, and as a Black woman, if I'm saying this to another white woman, I've had these conversations.
Yeah.
And if they're like, Tanya, I get it. I totally get it. And I had some beautiful conversations. I get it. I understand it. But I have to say it like that, in terms of, we talk about humanity, but I remember in the States, I think it was, there was a shooting in the States in a church. And I think it was a Black church. A white guy went in. I can't remember what the guy that was in. He shot everybody in the church. Yeah. Do you remember?
And
basically, you know what they said? They got the survivors. They said they forgive him.
Sorry, that's yeah. Like
now, as Black people, I'm sorry. There is so much forgiveness. That is humanistic, because they have just watched their people being shot, and they said, in the name of God, I forgive them. That says a lot about our people. And I think that people don't realize enough. We've gone through so much and we haven't fought back enough. So it's like that built up anger and that built up pain of constantly being hit at, constantly being pushed at. And actually, no, it's about time we start standing up for ourselves. And people may say, oh God, this is going on for long. People are still having these conversations. We are going to continue to have these conversations, because it's a learning process. And the process of learning is an ongoing life learning, especially when we've had to do with, let's say, those 400 years that has passed of colonialism and more. So there is so much to grow, for us to grow as human beings, and for us to interact, black and white, Asian, you know, we look at all of our human family. It's about, I think, interacting, but it's also right now having an idea and supporting the black man, supporting the black woman to move forward and to let go of some of these systems so we can really see ourselves as humans. God, I know I sound like a president there, but
yeah.
That's how I feel. That's how I feel so strongly. It's like we need to come together and really, on an internal, deep, spiritual level, see each other as humans. And that requires stepping into other people's shoes and looking through other people's lenses. And at this point, because the system has betrayed us as black people, it's about looking through the lens of the black woman and the black man. Right now it is.
Yeah.
Until those changes.
I think so too, yeah, indeed. Yeah, you need to be able to like place yourself in the shoes of the other person. Like if really like recognize the humanity of the other person. And I think like if, as long as you don't really do that, then of course you won't really feel the pain or acknowledge the pain of that person. I think also what they say, like when you talk about systems, I think that's important that like when you talk about these discussions about like racism, like important to indeed recognize that it's infused into the systems, like, and like if you don't like radically change the systems, then it will just keep like reproducing the same problem, the same outcomes that you would have had before.
Yes.
And I think that's yeah. It's easy to say like, okay, I personally don't engage in certain behaviors, but if you don't challenge the system, then well, actually you are actually also not trying to really resolve the problem. And when I think about these things, like, because it has been going on for such a long time, I'm like, if people can say like, for instance, like when the George Floyd video, that can be in like the Amy Cooper video, they can be like, okay, I'm shocked. I never knew that stuff was going on. But like, if you're even if you don't get taught everything in school, like if you open your eyes and you really try to place yourself in another person, then you, yeah, it's for me hard to believe that you don't know what's actually going on. And it's, yeah, also now in this age, like even with everything that happened this year, like when I say again, the US election, where you see how people are voting, then I'm like, well, can you still say that you're not aware, like with everything that's going on? At one point, you also need to say like, okay, it's not a question that you're not aware. It's simply that you do not care or that you do not fully recognize the humanity of other people. So, but yeah, when you talk about before, like, okay, moving forward, like what positive things do I see? Like, of course you do see like in the younger generation, you see like, and that's also experienced with certain younger people that, but you can also see that what I find interesting, like when you talk about like allies and people that proclaim to be allies, like, what you see, like the real allies, they don't even have to say that they're allies, like based on how they act and behave, you already know that they're allies, and they don't all even feel the need to like tell everybody how great of an ally they are. They just do it, like it's just like I see, like for them, certain things are normal, that for certain older generations or people with certain fixed mindsets are normal. And they just, yeah, they just didn't treat other people differently, and they look at people differently. And I think that, of course, is a positive sign, and you do see that with the younger generation growing up. But at the same time, you see that it's still there's quite a long way to go, and there are so many barriers in place. Like also when you look at other forms of because now, like we look at the last months, like when people talk about racial equity, all of a sudden that has become part of the diversity and inclusion discussion. Mm. But like even though, like I'm not a consultant in that area, like I said, I'm a data scientist, but of course, like I read a lot and I look at a lot of things, and like 7 or 8 months ago, like when people talk about diversity and inclusion,
imagine, yeah,
it wasn't racial equity that they were talking about. So it's nice to see certain people proclaim that they are behind it right now, but the reality also within that space was that this wasn't really something that was high on the agenda.
Exactly, it wasn't high on the agenda, and that's where the changes need to be, isn't it? You know, as I said, it's not just about the diversity and the inclusion, it's the mindset, and it's about changing what is priority and looking at things differently.
Yep.
And I suppose I have to have hope Because if I don't have hope,
yeah,
it takes away everything, you know. And I think I've got children, I think that next generation and the generation to come, I have hope for that next generation.
Yeah.
Educate them the way that we are, even this conversation will be educating people, you know, on some level. And when I say education, I mean in terms of educating the mind as well, you know, and allowing people to maybe question themselves and think different. And also, I always feel it's really good. I always say when someone disagrees with me and they don't agree, that's brilliant, because that's where the real growth starts. There's no point in being in groups where we're all singing the same tune.
Yeah.
You've got to be in groups where you have a difference of opinion. And I think there's a great TED talk, I don't know if I sent it to you, with Daryl, what's his name? It was basically this, it was a black guy that became friends with a guy from the Ku Klux Klan. He wanted to understand what was going on in his mind, you know? And that was so interesting, just listening to this TED talk, because sometimes we have to go to those places where we have to speak to people that disagree with us and understand where they're coming from, what their experience is. And then you can then foretell them what your experience is. And then you go, oh. And it's not until you go, oh, it's not until you are triggered.
Yeah.
It's not until these moments happen that we start to think, oh, I didn't see it that way.
That's
simply life. That's simply what needs to happen, I feel, is on a deeper level. That's what my feelings are, Mikhail.
I think so too. That critical thing, I think that's essential, that you also question like why you do stuff a certain way. Also question like the things that you get taught as a child, whether it's from your parents or at school, like, okay, is it actually correct? Like, also do your own investigations. Like, for instance, like when I talk about Christopher Columbus, your own investigations, and you don't even need to look very far. It's in his own journal, and that is accessible. Yeah. So indeed, critical thinking and really question, like, why do you believe certain things that support it? I think, really question history. And I think, I always loved reading. I love history, but like also when it comes to history, it's also like not only Black history. For instance, like I also have like a LinkedIn connection. She's has Armenian roots, but in Armenia they also have quite a painful history with Armenian genocide that took place like about 100 years ago. But that's also something that we don't get taught in school, and that's also like when I look at it, like what happened there, like that's like. So it was total insanity. But then you also need to question, like, okay, how come that we get so much in school about, for instance, about what happened in the Second World War or what happened in other certain wars, but those kinds of tragedies are not part of what we get taught. And like what she also told me is that how that makes her feel, because it's for her almost like, okay, don't we matter as Armenian people? Because that's, and also because there are also certain conflicts going on right now in that area. And that's like how it makes her feel. And that's, I think, also like important to consider with the Black Lives Matter, because there are a lot of people that get triggered just by the words. That already says a lot to me that you're fine with the brutality, but you get triggered by the words Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, people do get triggered. That's it. That's what's happening now. And that's because people are fighting back. And it's just about time people fight back. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And the fact that if you're triggered as a person, why are you triggered? Look back. Look a little bit deeper.
Yeah. And it's also a deflection strategy, I would say, like, because like as long as you're talking about the words, then you're not talking about the actual brutality.
Exactly.
Focusing your energy on trying to make sure that brutality does not take place anymore. So, and that's what's happening then, like, okay, let's talk about semantics, let's talk about the words. But the reality is like a few years ago at the BET Awards, there was an actor, forgot his name right now, but one thing that he also said is like, okay, if you don't have like a proven track record of critiquing basically our oppression, then you better not come around right now, talk about like, okay, how we try to end our oppression. Like, okay, if you haven't supported us anyway before, then please don't come talk right now. And I think that's what's going on. Like people that have been fine with oppression, but then start critiquing three little words. And that already like really shows you a lot about their mindset. And
of course. Yeah. It just says it all. But you know, I'm gonna have to bring it to a close, Mikhail. I love talking to you. I always love talking to you, and I feel it's a great learning space for people. And I just love having these conversations because I feel that they're just so important, no matter who you are, whether you're Black, white, Asian, listening to this. hopefully you can step into a different lens and try to understand things on a deeper level. And maybe if you don't, if there's things you don't know, investigate.
Exactly, yeah.
Rather than to be fixed in, even me, I'm trying not to be fixed in my mindset. I do pride myself on having a growth mindset, and I do like to be challenged. So I do listen. People, even if people don't agree with me, I want to talk to you even more. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you have a totally view, contact me. Yeah. I'd love to have, I might not have the same view as you, but it's a learning space in terms of understanding from different perspectives. And that's what I want to leave today with. But thank you very much. So I'm going to say from Tanya the Communication Doctor and Michael Runewald, adios.
Bye-bye.
One of my takeaways from this show was to change the world. We need to do more than kind of diversity and inclusion. It's all about mindset and changing the mind, changing the way that we look at things, changing the way that we look at inclusion and diversity, changing the way that we look at each other, being able to look through each other's lenses. There's so much there, and it was such a beautiful discussion to talk to Mikhail about racism, to talk about diversity and inclusion, and go right in and find out kind of what bothers today's society and how we can make changes and what we need to be aware of. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.